You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Wait. Before we start, just want to make sure we're clear here. While this podcast talks about sobriety, mental health, and addiction, it is not meant to replace professional medical advice. Welcome to Sisters in Sobriety.
I'm Kathleen.
And I'm Sonia.
And we're ex-sisters-in-law, brought together in marriage and bonded through our sobriety journey.
Join us as we talk sobriety, addiction, and everything in between.
You're in for quite a run.
And our Substack is buzzing with amazing content, from creative mocktail recipes to insightful courses and reflective exercises. There is something for everyone. Don't miss out. It's a great way to add some extra joy and depth to your journey. Check it out. Welcome to Sisters in Sobriety. This week, we're joined by Carly Ferrante, the host of Mostly Dating podcast and the creator of At Mostly Dating, where she serves up bite-sized dating wisdom with no fluff and a lot of truth.
From first dates to flirty texts that actually land, Carly has a guide, a list, or a hot take for it.
So in this episode, we'll unpack the actual signs that someone is ready for love, the conversations that matter, and how dating in sobriety allows way more clarity. Hi, Carly. Thank you for being here.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, we're going to jump right in. Also, as an aside, Kathleen and I both met our current partners on Bumble.
Oh.
Kathleen had a very lovely experience on Bumble 5 years ago. I had a horrifying experience in the last year.
Oh, what? Wait, why horrifying?
Kathleen, how would you describe it? There was a lot of misrepresentation, like people misrepresenting themselves. And for me, misrepresenting how much they drank, for example. Mm-hmm. And so that was a big problem. And then people would be okay for the first few dates and then let their guard down and start drinking a lot more. It became more obvious how big a part of their social life or even lives that drinking was. And so I would say that, I think there were some low-key sociopaths.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kathleen likes to refer to one guy as like the body parts guy, because we thought he had body parts in his freezer.
Oh my God. I've definitely been out with those types before also.
Body parts guy. Yeah, it was very subtle. It started with like, he had a millimeter measurement of heels that he liked his ladies to wear. Yeah, it was great.
But you both met people on Bumble.
We did. Okay. We did. I mean, story is not written. We're in the middle of it. So we'll see.
Me too.
So, Carly, this would have helped me a lot. What's a dating app opener that isn't,
hey, how's it going? So mine was always, hey, how's your day going?
Yeah.
And then if it was beginning of the week, it was like, anything fun happen on the weekend? Or then if it was later in the week, anything fun planned for the weekend?
Uh-huh.
So do you have any better ones?
Yeah, and I feel like those are like so classic. And I think that I would say, like, just a caveat, that just saying something is good. So I put definitely, hey, how's it going? Or hey, how was your weekend? And those things that you just said, I put that above just like matching and not saying anything, because that always drove me crazy. And I really recommend every time you even send someone a like on a dating app, sending it with a message, because like that's the conversation starter right there. But what I always like to say is just anything you can do to make it clear that you've read their profile is going to help the conversation. So I always like to view the dating app profile as the conversation starter in itself. So the best thing you can do on a dating app is have a profile that really like invites people to make conversation with you. So show activities you like, show your hobbies, just different types of pictures of you in different situations, and the prompts and bio as well, depending on the app that you're using. But for the opener, I always like to use sort of like the recipe of hi/hey, whatever your like greeting is. Hi, I see you love to travel. What's the next trip you have coming up? Or I always use the example of like my profile said something about how I'm a big runner and I like to run marathons. So an easy opener would be, hey, that's cool that you run. What race do you have coming up? Just something like kind of hello, observation, question is my perfect recipe for an opener.
Yeah, I like that too. I wish I had known that back in the day. But what are some sober friendly first date ideas?
Yeah, for first dates, I always liked a walk, like, which some people don't like because they want more of a vibe. But I like grabbing a coffee or a matcha or whatever your drink of choice is, like at a coffee shop, and going for a walk, or even meeting up in a local park that has a lot of people in it just for safety reasons, and sitting down and just talking there. If there's like a local bar that has a lot of non-alcoholic options and you want to do that, but if you want to steer clear of the bars altogether, I would always say a walk, a coffee, ice cream, depending on the time of year, even like a dessert date, because all of those too, similar to drinks, are not, they don't have a time necessity to them. Like, it's not you're sitting down for a full meal or going to like a sports game or something that might be a really long thing. I think make it something that could be short if there isn't really like a vibe there or connection, but does allow you to talk to each other. So obviously not a movie or something like that.
So where can you meet someone that isn't a bar?
In terms of like meeting someone who you'll want to date?
Yeah.
I think everywhere. And it's so funny because I have some posts on my Instagram that are places you can meet people in real life, like not on the dating apps. And at the end of it, I always want to say, like, bonus, like literally everywhere, because I think you can meet people in all situations if we just kind of open ourselves up to it. And of course, it's going to be a little bit more intimidating than if you swipe yes on someone on an app. You never see the rejection if they don't say yes. So you don't have to deal with that. So if you walk up to someone and then they're not interested or they sort of blow you off, that's, of course, that's going to hurt. But in my opinion, it puts out the energy that you are open to meeting people. And every time you like talk to someone in public or even make small talk with someone online at a grocery store or something, I think that that is pushing you toward the direction of just being a more approachable and having more opportunities to meet people. So I even say you can meet someone at like a workout class or at like the gym, or at, if you're in parts of any clubs or groups or like kind of recreational sports leagues and things like that. I think you can meet people really anywhere. And the thing that I like to do when I was single that kind of pushed me out of my comfort zone and made me more comfortable talking to someone, I definitely had times where I saw someone who I thought was cute on the subway or something, and then afterwards I really like kicked myself for not just like saying hello. And so what I started doing was, in all situations, even if it wasn't someone that I was like romantically interested in, if it was the barista at the coffee shop or the waiter at the restaurant, I was just kind of like more talkative in general to the people around me, so that it felt more comfortable when I saw someone that then I was interested in. It wasn't so out of the realm that I would make small talk with a stranger.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny. I was asked out this weekend at the, I was at the garden center.
Oh, wow. Wait. And so what did you do?
Well, I have a boyfriend, so I politely declined. But yeah, he was grilling the garden center person about whether or not the vegetables weren't genetically modified or organic. So I like participated in the conversation. because that was kind of up my alley.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, he was like, oh, do you live in the area? And I was like, I do. And he was like, do you want to grab a drink sometime? See how the drinks always come up?
Yeah, yeah,
and I was like, thanks so much. I don't think my boyfriend would appreciate it, but thanks
so much.
But that's
like the perfect scenario.
Yeah.
Kind of like, we're kind of just making conversation and you weren't thinking of it as a way of like, obviously you have a boyfriend, you weren't thinking
no.
But he then made his own conversation. I think anything you can do to just say something and then read their reaction. Obviously, if you say something to someone and you just make a comment to them and then they're not really picking it up, then you kind of back away. But in this scenario, you said you had a boyfriend and that was fine. I doubt it like ruined his whole life. He put himself out there and then it hopefully made him more comfortable doing it in the future. So I think it's kind of one of those practice type things.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, haven't we sort of like lost that? I don't know how to have a conversation with a stranger. Like, I truly do not know how to do it anymore.
Do you like though, because I feel like I do with women.
Oh, yeah.
But this is a couple of months ago. I was at the hairdresser and like I randomly met obviously like a woman there. And by the end, we were like hugging each other goodbye. And like she was like, oh my God, it's been so amazing to meet you. And she was like getting all teary. I don't do that. I don't usually talk to men, I find. Yeah. Like I'm heterosexual. So like I don't talk to men.
Yeah. Really, and it might be because like you don't want to give the wrong impression if you're not.
Yeah, like, maybe.
Like that. I also do feel like it can be hard with women too, just depending on your personality and if you're introverted. And that's why it's so hard sometimes to make friends as like an adult. I think that gets difficult too. So it seems like you're really good at it. But I think being everyone making an effort to just talk to more people is like only going to help us, because I agree that some of us have really lost that skill.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So I had a guy come measure for blinds at my house last week, and he ended up being in AA for a really long time, and he got really emotional and was like, you know, I just don't think anything is a coincidence, and I think I was sent here to meet you and blah, blah, blah. Shout out if you're listening, because I gave him the name of the podcast. But it's funny when he said, oh, do you want to meet like some other people in recovery around this area? And I was like, yeah, but I'm more like a girl's girl. I would rather do like a women's group. And he's like, oh, I have a few great women I could introduce you to. And he was like, you should meet my wife. And I was like, that's up my alley. Sorry, I digress. So Carly, what's a question we can ask people pretty early on while we're chatting online or, you know, during a first date that can tell you a lot about someone's dating mindset?
I think, I mean, I feel there's so many come to mind, but I think when I'm thinking about first date questions, I know a lot of people will say to kind of keep it to small talk on early dates, and I definitely don't agree with that. I think, of course, you should keep it light and fun and you're just getting to know each other, but I do definitely believe in asking questions about the future and asking questions about the past, and I think that those two things can help you get to know someone so much. So even as you're in conversation, because I also do have to caveat that if anyone does follow my account or looks at my account, I do. I have so many posts about questions to ask on dates, and I, without fail, will always get comments on those posts. Oh, like, I don't want my date to sound like a job interview and things like that. And I definitely don't mean for people to pull out this list and just fire off these questions. So I think the best thing you can do as you're getting to know someone to really measure and gauge if you're compatible is turn these questions more into conversations and use the topics that come up to then segue into different questions. And I think that as you're getting to know someone and you're making conversation early on, the best thing you can do is really latch on to the things that do help them open up. So if you ask them a certain question, maybe about their family, and then that really opens up a vault for them and they start talking about a lot of different things, even though in your mind you thought, oh, I have to ask them what they're looking for long term on this date, put that aside in your head and then kind of ask follow-up questions and keep getting to know the topic that you're talking to them about, because I think certain topics will make people open up. So you don't want to pass up the opportunity and then move on to something else that maybe doesn't hit as much. So I like to sort of stick to the topics that stick is what I say. But I think asking questions early on is so important when you're trying to figure out what someone is looking for. I did always like to ask, and I do recommend asking about past relationships. I don't think you should dive so deep into it and ask them like for all the dirty details or anything. But I think asking questions about their past relationships and just paying attention to the way that they talk about either the person or the relationship in general to show that what they've learned and maybe what qualities of that relationship they liked, what they want to like bring into a future relationship, maybe also why it ended, I think can just teach you a lot about someone. And maybe they've had no past relationships and that's fine too. I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing. But if that's the case, then I would ask them more about, like I said, their family or their friendships. I always like to ask on early dates, who are the closest people in your life? Like, who do you spend the most time with? Who do you go to when you're having a hard day? Who knows you the best? Those types of questions, because then you can kind of ask about those people too and learn key qualities about the people that they're close to, which will help you know if you're compatible, if you have some of those qualities. I think that could help too.
Yeah. So Carly, this is something I really struggled with. Was talking about my past. I was with someone for 18 years. Mm-hmm. And so talking about that relationship was tough because, you know, it was a really bad ending, right? I also, you know, I tried to steer away from saying really mean things about him.
Yeah.
But what is, like, how can you bring it up? What are ways you can talk about a past relationship without turning it into, like, a trauma dumping session? Or like, oh, well, I have abandonment issues because my husband just got up and left one day and went with that other chick and blah, blah, blah. Or now I have self-esteem issues because she was like 10 years younger than me, but she was. Okay, so how what are some healthy ways we can bring up and what are important points to bring up about our past relationships?
Yeah, there's so many things about what you just said in that specific scenario example. I think that if I like to let it unfold kind of over time. So I do like to, like I said, talk about it early on. And maybe if that was a scenario that happened, then you mentioned my longest relationship was 18 years. It ended because of XYZ, and just kind of give the solid facts instead of like putting so much into like, and he did this to me and it was like him and all of this, just kind of like say what happened. And sometimes it is something that he did to you, and sometimes it was a toxic relationship. You don't have to sugarcoat it and kind of like paint them as this amazing person if they weren't, but as long as you're sticking to like the actual facts of what happened. And then I do think over time, if this is someone that you do see yourself being in a relationship with and you're sort of getting to that point, I do think it's really important to go a little bit deeper and say some of the things, like if it did impact sort of the way that you think you're going to show up in that relationship. I think the most important things to share are the things that will impact this relationship. So if you're just kind of sharing trauma from like 30 years ago or something that like that doesn't even impact you right now, then I don't think that's as productive. But if it is something that's like, oh, this is really fresh, or this is still affecting me and this might make me a little insecure, or this might make me feel a little anxious, or this makes me shut down when things get difficult or something, like however a specific relationship impacts you, it's just data that you're giving to the person, the new person that you're going to be building a relationship with. And I think it's super helpful, but I don't think it's as productive if it's like date one and you don't even know if you're going to date them and you're kind of telling them all of these things that are affecting you.
Mm-hmm.
What about values? Do you think that values should be explored on a first date?
I definitely do. And I think that I've talked so much about this because I think that for me, I had such a long period of time where I hated, I can't even remember what dating app it was, but there was one that said something about your values in one of the prompts or the bio or something. And I really got tripped up with that, or people would ask me about my values on early dates and I didn't really know like what my values were. I, for some reason, had this block around values. I feel like it's a term that we use so much, but then when I sat down and thought about it, I was like, what even are my values? And so I did a lot of research on it and just a lot of reflection. And there is so much research that shows that couples with aligned values have longer, healthier, more successful, happier relationships. And I was like, there's obviously something to this. I have to really figure this out. And so I really got clear and did a lot of, like I said, reflection to figure out what my values were. And what I learned for myself, at least, and a lot of people that I've worked with and talked to, is that you don't have to have the exact same values as someone, but they do have to be aligned. And the thing that I always like to mention is like, your values are different than like your interests and your hobbies and things. Your interests and your hobbies, I think, actually should be pretty different. Like, you should have like commonalities there too, but it's important to have sort of your own things that you're interested in. But the values, I think, have to align. And I think that I always suggest on date one, not asking like, oh, what are your values? Just because from my own experience, I know I didn't like that question. And it wasn't as productive because I would kind of just list off a couple things. And then it was sort of like, I don't know, it never really worked as well for me. But I like to ask questions that I think help you determine their values without directly asking it. So even asking like, what's one social cause you're really passionate about, or what's something that you really love about yourself, or what's something that you admire in other people, what's something that you're willing to fight for, all of these questions, I think, or even like, what's one thing you might change about the way you were raised, things like that. Can be those even two of those questions could fill like almost a whole day, because you could really go down different paths, and some of their responses will help you learn more about what their values are.
So Carly, this is something I did not experience until I started dating again as a full adult, but can attraction grow throughout the dating process, or does it have to be instant?
I honestly think it can grow, and I feel like we could have a whole episode just debating this, but I do think that it can grow, but I think that there has to be something for it to grow from. I think that people get so caught up in the spark and having fireworks on an early date and everything like that. And that doesn't necessarily have to be the case. But I do think that there has to be some sort of chemistry and some sort of attraction that then the spark can grow from. So there needs to be a little bit of a flicker there at least. You have to find them attractive. You have to be at least curious and get to know them better and everything like that. I actually think it's a bad sign if it starts off super strong and then like it fizzles off over time. Like if somebody is giving you like their full A game and putting so much effort into date one, and it's like this whole chemistry, like super sparky. I sometimes think that that's just like almost a facade, or it's not a real connection. Whereas I think if there's attraction early on, you're into them and you're curious to get to know them and you feel compatible, and then it builds as you do different activities together, you go to different places together, you get to know each other better, then the attraction and the chemistry, I think, grows from there.
That's interesting. Kathleen says that when I started dating, she was like, that feeling, whatever, you know what it is, she's like, is not healthy. Kathleen, what did you say?
I mean, I'm a relationship therapist, so I don't really believe in like in the love at first sight situation, because I mean, I think it's possible, but what that feeling is where you get like totally consumed by that person, that is your brain. And then I say to clients, like, that is your brain on drugs.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it is. And so I actually will tell my clients that I think it's better that a relationship and attraction grows over time, that it's more sustainable, more grounded, not as like, not as dependent on the chemicals and the neurotransmitters in your brain. It's actually just more based on connection and values. And that's probably better long term.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I've had those relationships too, where it was like from the start, there was so much chemistry and so much energy, and I was like obsessed with them, and they never ended well.
They never ended well, right? Because usually when that happens, it's because we're recreating some sort of trauma from our past, like a past relationship, a past dynamic. And so it feels exciting and good for us because that's what feels normal. But actually, no, that's not what we need.
I'm very happy to hear your perspective on that, because I think that that is exactly what happened to me for so long. And and then I would sort of repeat that with different people. I would kind of recreate that feeling. Mm-hmm. And then when I started to date people who didn't give me that feeling, I thought, I just automatically assumed, okay, this isn't a match, because I'm not feeling all of that excitement. And it took a lot of time and work and energy to figure out that, no, that's actually a good thing. You're just feeling secure and calm and like connected.
That's right.
So much energy.
That's right. Secure does not feel like chaos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Chaos can sometimes feel like, oh, that's passion. So being able to tease out what's chaos, what's passion, what's actually healthy, secure in a relationship can be hard if you don't do that kind of thinking and reflection like you did, Carly.
Yeah. I actually got a question from a listener a few weeks ago on my podcast that was about, it was kind of about that. She was saying that she's in a very secure, happy relationship. They live together and things are great, but she still sometimes thinks back to this past relationship where there was like so much chemistry and all that firework and fiery energy. And she was like, is this a red flag that I keep thinking back to it? And I'm like, I never like telling someone if something's a red flag or not, but I totally empathize with thinking back to it, because I still do that sometimes too, because it's such a different, strong feeling when you're in a relationship like that.
For sure. And it's interesting for that listener. I think what we will often do is self-sabotage to get back to that chaos, because that is what feels normal and familiar to us. So resisting the urge to self-sabotage, like a healthy relationship, to go back to the chaos.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously, of course, with the topics that you guys talk about too, I think that can be something that probably comes into play a lot. If you used to go out on dates where you were drinking and now you're not drinking on dates, I think that that probably is a huge element of it.
Yeah, for sure. How do you spot whether someone is emotionally available in the first few dates?
A lot of it for me is the way they answer the questions that you're asking. And even if you are asking some of those questions that we've mentioned before, and how deep they're willing to go. And again, you don't have to go super deep and dump everything on date one. But if you ask them something that has a little bit more depth to it and they sort of make a joke out of it or laugh it off, and then that becomes a pattern, maybe if they do it once or twice, maybe they have a lighthearted personality. But if that becomes a pattern and they're not willing to open up or share things with you, I think that that's a sign that they're not emotionally available. If they are willing to open up, I think that that is a really good sign. I also think another good sign is just paying attention to how mutual the conversation even is. So if they're asking you as many questions as you're asking them, if they're asking follow-up questions, if they're doing all of the things that I already mentioned a little bit of, just listening to you, making the eye contact. Also, a big one for me was always like remembering the things you tell them. I sometimes would get to third, fourth date with someone and they were still asking me questions that they asked me on date one. And it just didn't feel like there was that emotional availability and like actually wanting to get to know me. But there was nothing that made me happier than if someone just remembered something I told them on date one and they asked me something about it. Like, oh, you had mentioned you were going to do this past weekend. How did that go? Something that they're doing to show you that they're actually invested in getting to know you. And then just talking about the future in general, I think. And I think that, of course, there can be like the love bombing and the like overdoing this, and people talking about the future doesn't necessarily mean they want a future with you, but just the ability to talk about the things that they want can show that could be a sign of emotional availability.
I remember Sonia was dating someone, but you weren't sure. You were like, I don't know. And I was like, does he ask you questions? And you were like, no.
Yeah.
And I was like,
Yeah. It's a big one.
I remember also, being like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Like you don't realize it sometimes. But so Kathleen and I were also talking about what's the difference between emotional availability and maturity. And so when I started dating my boyfriend, he's a very positive, look at the bright side.
Yeah.
And I noticed whenever I would start talking about something sad or traumatic, like he would start to sing a song. And I was like, I'm done with you.
The beginning.
Like he would take a word that I said and he would sing a song based off of that word. And I was like, this guy has zero emotional depth. And so I gave him a shot and I was like, look, you're doing this thing and it's honestly like infuriating. And he was like, I don't even realize I'm doing it.
Wow.
And he has stopped doing it. But it's like, why do I have to coach a 50-year-old man? It's like, how did you even get to this age?
Right. But it's also like the fact that you just brought it up and mentioned it and that then he stopped doing it. He probably got to this age because everybody else just brushed it under the rug and they never said anything.
I find he says this a lot, which is, no one's ever asked me to do that. So how do you assess emotional depth or maturity aside from realizing your boyfriend sings songs when you start to talk about difficult things?
Yeah.
God, I could psychoanalyze that story to say.
Oh, it's so obvious though, right? I was like, dude. At the beginning, I was very like open to ending it if things weren't lining up. Okay, if you can't listen, like, I'm done with you. I literally was giving him one chance.
Yeah.
Don't sing a song.
Yeah, it's so funny because I think that even just you telling that story and talking about the difference between emotional availability and emotional like maturity and depth, I think even the examples that I was giving are probably more geared towards just emotional depth in general, like the ability to open up and the ability to have more meaningful conversations and even hold space for when you're doing that. But other things more for like emotional availability would be like just consistency in general, following up when they say they're going to. You don't feel like you're wondering if you're going to have a next date with them. And
you just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
They're doing things to move the relationship forward and you're doing things to move the relationship forward. Just that mutual effort, I think, shows it. Or those are also more signs that they want a relationship with you. But just in general, kind of like that ability to be consistent and be sort of counted on, I think, could fit for both of those.
I would say my boyfriend was this rare hybrid of very emotionally available, calls all the time, always making plans. I know how he feels about me, but emotionally immature sometimes. So very, very tough hybrid.
Yeah.
Where it's like, he knows what he wants in a relationship. Yeah, that guy. So what's something you should always ask someone before getting serious?
I hate to sound like a broken record, but asking about the future, I think it's so important. Also, depending on what age you are, like if you're 22 years old and you don't want to get married for 10 years and you don't have to ask as in-depth questions about the future. But if you're dating intentionally and you want to get married or you want to have kids or whatever it is, or you just want a long-term future with this person, you have to ask those questions early on about what they're looking for. Mm. And the way that I always like to do that is by just sharing what I'm looking for, I think is the best way to give someone the space to open up about what they're looking for. If someone would ask me, oh, what are you looking for on an early date? I would sort of shut down even if I knew what I was looking for, just because I didn't feel like I wanted to be so vulnerable when they hadn't done that at all. So I would typically say early on, like, oh, I'm really dating for a relationship right now. I don't really do casual or just whatever it is. Or I want to have kids eventually, or I want to get married, and just kind of mention the things that I want so that they can then have the floor to say the things that they want. And if they're not, if you're saying all those things and they're just like kind of nodding along or just returning it at all of what they're looking for, then that to me would be a sign that they're not either emotionally available or they're not looking for something serious with you. Because I have listeners who have come to me and said things like that they shared everything they were looking for early on, and the other person always said like, yeah, me too, and then 6 months later they didn't want those things. But I actually don't think it's a great sign if they're just saying me too, like they should be still verbalizing the things that they want, not just yesing you as you're saying what you want.
How, in terms of the getting to know you phase of dating, how do you think we should be putting a time limit on how long we stay in that phase?
I never like to say time limit, but I do think that there's specific things that you should do and things that you should know before you actually get into a relationship. And I think that that does obviously take time. So I think that you don't want to rush that phase. It's also a fun phase. I think that there's no need to really rush it. And so for me, it's more about as I was getting toward like wanting to find the relationship with someone or be in a committed relationship with someone, there were things that I wanted to make sure that I knew about them, or I knew about what the relationship was going to be like and everything like that. I think that some things like that are like what we mentioned about like knowing what you both want and everything, but also things like knowing how they handle conflict, or have you guys had a disagreement at all? I think it's probably not a good sign if you haven't disagreed about anything. And I think that's important before you get into a relationship with someone. You don't have to cause an argument just to evaluate it. But if there's never been a topic that you've had a difference of opinions on, or just had any conflict in general, I think you probably might want to spend a little bit more time together, at least to see sort of how that would play out. Mm-hmm. You want to see each other in different environments too. And you want to see each other on just a regular casual Thursday night or something. You don't want to have everything be a planned date. And you want to make sure that you've seen each other in your natural environments and experienced that together too. Because like, if we're being honest, obviously most of your relationship is not going to be this planned date. It's most of it is going mm-hmm. to be like casual time together.
Yeah, because I work with mostly couples who have been together usually quite some time. I actually think that the getting to know you phase should never end.
That's the best answer.
Yeah, because I see like where couples start to get stagnant and disconnected is they're no longer interested in each other. And so one of the things I find that brings couples back together and really creates that connection is learning more about them. So I've been with my boyfriend for 5 years now, and we just started doing this app together. Well, we haven't just started doing it. We've been doing it for like 6 months, and it asks all these different questions, and we do it every day. And so
it's coming up on my Instagram. Oh, I think because of you.
I think it's really interesting because we get to know, I'm like, oh, I never knew this about you. And then I will talk to my partner about it. And so I think it's really, really important that phase actually never ends. And I swear I didn't ask you, Carly, as a trick question. This is just my opinion.
I could not agree more. And I'm so happy that you said that because I would have been kicking myself if I didn't mention that. I think that's so true. I think that I did a post on Instagram once that was like ways to get to know the person you're dating without just asking questions. And I caveated mm-hmm. there, like whether you've been together for 2 months, 2 years, 20 years, these are the ways that you can just keep getting to know someone because people are going to change and you don't want to wake up one day and feel like your partner doesn't even know you because you kind of stopped that phase. So traveling together, spending time with friends together, doing different activities, like what you said about asking questions or using it like an app like that, I think making that kind of a little ritual or tradition that you guys do together, I think could be so helpful. And just don't assume, no matter how long you've been with your partner, don't assume that you know everything about them.
Mm-hmm. I will say, since I wrote the question, what I was getting at was when you're like, I'm still getting to know them. You're in my mind, not exclusive. You're getting to know multiple people. Like how many dates are you like, okay, I think we're out of this. I don't know whether or not I like you. I don't know whether or not our lifestyles or values align. And when is it time to kind of be like, okay, I think I'm not going to date other people because I got to know a bunch of people and you're my favorite.
Yeah. So, I think
just so you guys know, that's what I meant.
I know that I feel like that makes sense too. I think that it's like, it's so hard because everyone's so different. Like, I personally, I feel like I would go on like 2 dates if I was interested in them. I just wouldn't even want to go on other dates. And I wasn't putting all of my energy into this person, but I wanted to put my dating energy into getting to know them and then continue with the rest of my life with the rest of my energy. Like I didn't want to ever be just putting everything into like so many different first dates as I was getting to know someone. Yes. And I do think that as things are getting more consistent with you guys, I don't think it should take longer than 5 dates to know if you do see yourself, mm-hmm. you see this person being mm-hmm. someone that you do want to build a relationship with. You don't necessarily know it's going to be for the rest of your life, but 5 dates in, you shouldn't be wasting either of your time if you think that if you don't see it seriously, I think.
Yeah. So the last time I was dating before this current time, the rules were coming out.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And so just thinking back, the rules, right? The goal was to get someone to now what we call love bomb you, really, right? And so love bombing was the goal. And so what is the difference between if somebody is actually really starting to fall in love with you or just love bombing? Because I think there's also a lot of people out there our age, Kathleen, that are like, love bombing is the sign that he's into you. Because we also watched the movie, he's just not that into you.
Yeah, right. I remember that. That's such a funny observation, though, because I do think you're so right that the rules were, the goal was to get them to love bomb you. And now we're like, uh-oh, it's a love bomber, run away. That's why all these terms sometimes I'm like, oh, like I can't, it's too much for me because it's like, we're just trying to kind of put a blanket statement or a blanket one size fits all rule on all relationships. And I just know that they're all so different. And I think that if something works for you, then it works for you and then use it. And that's why the way I think about rules is kind of like as boundaries for yourself. If you know that that when you send someone a text after a date, you tend to get really anxious and don't know, like, panic about if they're going to text you back and like kick yourself for sending the text and not waiting, then don't send the text. But if you're not sending the text because someone on Instagram told you not to send the text and it works for everybody, then that's just kind of like, why are you using that rule? Or like staying on a date for longer than 90 minutes or whatever. I've just heard all these different rules put out that it's like, yeah, if you tend to get really attached when you have long first dates, then make that a boundary for yourself that you're not going to have long first dates. Yeah. But sometimes people can go on a 4-hour date and then they'll be fine if it doesn't work out. So it's whatever works for you, I think, is the way that I like to think about rules and really taking the time to reflect and consider, why am I using this rule? Is it because I'm trying to make a relationship work that might not have worked if I didn't have this specific behavior? Because I personally don't think that you can scare away the wrong person. So I like to just be a bit more mindful about why I'm using those rules. But with love bombing, I feel like it's like, it is a really hard thing to decipher. And I don't know what the best way is to identify a love bomber, because especially as I shared a little bit about my past dating experience, I would get really turned off if someone was even like the littlest bit affectionate. And I might have thought that was like love bombing because I wasn't used to it. I was more used to sort of like the chase or more toxic type relationships. And so I think that checking in with your own dating patterns and your own dating behaviors can be really helpful. And then if they're being like super over the top and they're always kind of more talk than action, or they're talking a lot about the future, like I said, but they're not being consistent, or it feels like you have to put on an act to keep up with their energy, or they're like really like showering you in compliments and gifts and you don't feel comfortable about it, I think that those are probably all bad signs.
So what changes do you think when you date without drinking?
I feel like a lot changes. I'm not sober, but I have gone through periods where I am not drinking. And I actually have had people say no when I tell them, like on a dating app, oh, I actually don't drink, I would prefer not to go on a drinking date. Then they've just been kind of like, never mind. That happened to me multiple times on dates. And it's like,
me too.
It's so frustrating. I don't really fully remember the context of the scenario, but I got in a little bit of a back and forth with someone on a dating app about it once, because I'm like, really? You can't go on a date without drinking? And it just made me so mad. And so I think obviously just setting from the very start, if you are someone who's sober and you don't want to go to a bar at all, that can become uncomfortable, or there's more sort of semantics to it, and it might cut out people who don't want to do that. And I would say that, of course, they're just not the right person for you. It still can be super frustrating, but I think that it's almost a good thing that it's you didn't get involved with that person. But I think that everyone has certain things that people just aren't going to be into. And if somebody needs to be dating someone who drinks, then they're not the person for you, I guess is the moral of that story. But as you move forward into it, I do think, of course, alcohol like loosens people up and it makes you feel like you're opening up more, like you're connecting more because you have your guard down a little bit more. And so it's a crutch that you can use on early dates. And when you don't have that, everything feels a little bit more real and it feels a little bit more scary and you might feel more nervous, like asking a certain question or saying a certain thing, but it is more real, and being more real is actually a good thing. So I think that's the way that I like to think about it. Even though I do drink, if I was out there dating right now, I wouldn't want to be having a lot of drinks on an early date, because I would want to really, truly get to know somebody.
Yeah, I agree. So what becomes clearer when you're sober dating, especially about your boundaries? And I think when I was thinking about this question, I was thinking about physical boundaries, because when you're drunk, you hear about like beer goggles, drunken hookups. So what do you think about the boundaries that happen when you're sober dating?
Yeah, definitely everything you just said. I think that even like a kiss on the first date, I think I've been in scenarios where like I've gotten more physical because I was drinking 1,000%. And I wanted to in that moment, but it later on, I think then you think back and you're like, you're not fully with it. So you're not fully making that decision from a place of like truly wanting to kiss that person or sleep with that person or whatever it is. And so I think that cutting that out, it makes you make a decision more from like how you're actually feeling and like a grounded energy. And for me also in general, I think just like being physical with someone, brings up so many other emotions and hormones and all of these things that sort of make things a little bit more muddy and hard to figure out how you truly feel about the person once that's introduced. So then coupling in alcohol with that, it just gets so confusing. So there's so much of a lack of clarity in that as well that I think, and like sometimes I'd had in the past too, where maybe we drank on the first few dates and then you didn't drink on a date and it almost felt weird suddenly, like you didn't know them as well because you didn't have the alcohol. And it's like, maybe then you go and you're going to hook up with them, but you haven't done that yet sober. And it's like, oh, it's the first time you're hooking up with them sober. There's so many elements to it. Mm-hmm. But then if you're not drinking at all, I feel like it becomes a lot more clear.
For sure. For sure. And so how do you even flirt when you're not tipsy? Ooh. I mean, I know now.
I'm so curious to hear both of your takes on that as well. My take for flirting, I think it's obviously it's so unique to each person. And I think that that's such a fun thing about it is that as you start really like putting yourself out there and flirting with someone new that you're on a date with, you can sort of feel if they match your flirting energy. And I think that some of the things you can do to really make that happen and feel more comfortable flirting with someone is, for me, a big one is just staying present in the moment. So I wouldn't like on dates early on, sometimes I would get so worried about, do they like me? How are they feeling about me? Are we going to go on another date? And you're thinking so much about that, that it takes away from the present moment. But if you're serious, if you're truly focusing on what's happening, you'll have more to work with. You'll notice something maybe that they say that you can kind of like tease them about and use that as a way of flirting, or just, you'll kind of just appear more like at ease and in the moment. And like, obviously confidence helps so much. So just doing things in general that like make you feel confident and in everyday life will help you more with flirting on a date. But I also think just body language, obviously making sure that you're looking at them and making eye contact, and even just a small like touch to their arm if they seem like they're into it too. I think just putting some feelers out there and then playing off their vibe. It's like, you can't give a recipe for flirting because for every two people, it's going to look a little different.
I don't know. My boyfriend was flirting on our first date and I was so uncomfortable and awkward. I liked it, but I didn't know how to like reciprocate. But I think there's some charm in my awkwardness.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. I also think like complimenting people helps a lot. Just people are so resistant to complimenting people. It's so funny. I've done polls about this on Instagram. Everybody likes getting compliments. You might receive it a little bit awkwardly or feel a little uncomfortable in the moment, but it's going to make you feel good if someone's giving you a true, genuine compliment. But then I'll do polls on my Instagram and it's like, do you compliment people on early dates if you're into them? And so many people say no. Everyone feels so uncomfortable doing it. People even say they don't really compliment their partner in a relationship. And we can feel awkward giving the compliment, but you're really going to like make their day. And that could build the flirty energy if you tell them you like their energy, or maybe like their laugh is contagious or something like that, or they have really good style, something like that, that they can kind of grab onto, and then you can build a vibe from there, I think can really help. And even just using someone's name in conversation, I feel like that builds the vibe for me too.
Yeah, that's interesting. I do that quite a bit. I use someone's name, like not overly.
Yeah.
This is not for flirting, but it's to build connection.
Uh-huh.
I do that a lot. It's a great way to do it. I think what you said about confidence, I think is so important. So if you are dating sober, I think having that confidence, however you get that, whether that's not through alcohol, but whether that's working out, moving your body, putting on an outfit that you really like, saying some affirmations to yourself before you go out, just having that mindset, making sure you're in that mindset before you go on the date.
Yeah, I totally agree. Or even calling someone who always puts you like in a good mood or makes you feel good before a date, I think could be helpful too. I love all of those tips. When you guys were first dating sober, was that one of the biggest things that you struggled with, trying to build that connection early on?
I hated dating sober. Like, I just hated the whole experience of dating. And I don't know if I was drinking, if I would have hated it as much because it's so nerve-wracking. So normally when I was drinking, I would have like a glass of wine while I was getting dressed and order a drink when I got there. And so I would be more comfortable. But when I quit drinking, I was just going on these dates, you know, like my eyes were just like wide open. I was so nervous. And it would take a really long time for the nerves to calm down.
Yeah.
I think I maybe had a different experience because when I dated before I married Sonia's brother, I was not sober dating. And then when
clearly,
yeah, clearly I was not sober when I was dating him. But when we divorced and I was dating, I actually had the best time dating.
I remember that.
You remember? I was like living my best life because I was just dating for fun. Like I had no expectation of anything. I wasn't looking for a relationship. I was super happy on my own. It was like, I get to meet new people. Yeah. I get to experience this. I kind of was dating for the content in the sense, like the content of my life, not for social media, just like the content of my life. So I had the best time, even not like people that I wouldn't end up with. We had the most fun dates because I think it was my mindset going into it. I just was not, my goal was not to find someone. It was just to have an experience.
Yeah. And I feel like that right there is the best advice you can give to anyone who's dating, because you even going into a first date, think of it as just having an experience. Think of it as just meeting someone new. Think about it as just getting to know someone or just, adding to the experiences of your life. That's so helpful. That's why I also always loved, I used to solo travel a lot and I used to love downloading the apps in different cities. I didn't expect to meet like my future husband in a city I didn't even live in, but it could just give you dating practice and just get you out there and help you meet new people.
So Carly, we talk a lot about staying grounded in sobriety, and I struggled with this. How do you stay grounded when you're getting ghosted or someone's not texting you back? Like, what are ways we can protect our peace in those situations? And I think that's like especially important when you're sober.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I mean, the confidence thing is huge, obviously. I think one thing that just continues to be a theme for me, like was always a theme in my dating life and in a lot of the advice that I give, is like your relationship with yourself in general. And so this question obviously ties into that. I think that the better you can know yourself, and we said about continuing to get to know your partner, you should always continue to get to know yourself too. So even when I post all of these different questions to ask on dates and questions to ask your partner, I find myself asking myself these questions because I'm like, I want to always have this relationship with myself that like, I'm continuing to get to know myself. I'm continuing to like practice that self-love and self-care and all of those things, and really being mindful of the limiting beliefs I'm telling myself and things like that. I think that self-reflection is the best thing you can do for your dating life and for your relationships in general, because if you know yourself so well and you know your boundaries and you know, like I said, your limiting beliefs and maybe your dating patterns and tendencies and things like that, that's going to help you stay grounded next time that does happen. If someone ghosts you, you're going to be able to, it's still probably going to sting, but you can come back to those things that you love about yourself and the facts versus the stories that you're telling yourself and things like that. And the better your relationship is with yourself, like the better you're treating yourself, you're also just going to attract people who are going to treat you that way. So you kind of have to lead by example. It's like, if you're not treating yourself well, you're not having that relationship with yourself, why is someone else going to give you those things that you're not giving yourself?
Yeah. Exactly. So when I started being healthy about dating, I was telling myself that my person isn't going to not text me back.
Yeah.
Right? So like, this is just not my person. And so that really kept me grounded. It was like, well, my person is still out there and this is just not them.
Yeah. They're not going to find you if you're with somebody else. I feel like if that person hadn't ghosted you and you're with the wrong person, like we have to let go of the wrong people and the wrong relationships in order for the right ones to come into our lives. And that's for any relationship, like friendships, romantic, all of that. I think that the longer you stay in something that's wrong, the further out the right thing is going to be.
So what are the signs that someone isn't right for you, even if nothing is wrong?
Ooh, that's a good one. I definitely have some content on that. I think that if you find yourself, one big one for me is you find yourself constantly, and I want to say this is like a huge caveat, but if you find yourself constantly comparing your relationship to other relationships or wishing you had what they had and those types of things, I think a little comparison is natural, obviously, for everybody all the time. But if you're if you're always thinking, oh, that's more of a relationship I want, or there's this kind of like longing in you, and there's not necessarily something in your relationship that you can point your finger at, like they cheated or they lied or this happened, it can be really hard. Those are sometimes the hardest relationships to end, because there's no real reason, and you find yourself playing out what might have happened if you stayed together and everything like that. But that kind of comparison to me is a red flag. And sometimes you can overcome that and you can think like, oh yeah, I do wish we did more of traveling together like this couple, and then you guys can start to do that. But if you're regularly doing that, I think also in general, it has been a big theme of this conversation, even like people are constantly changing. And if one day you wake up and you realize that the people that you've changed into aren't like aligned with each other anymore, like that can happen, especially if your future goals aren't aligned. So maybe something's changed about what you both want. That's a sign, of course, that the relationship isn't right. And then this was a big one for me in early dating, and I think can be something that you should always clue into in relationships as well, is if you feel like you're in a bad mood after you're around them, or like you're kind of like always wanting to be around other people, or if they're like draining your energy and you feel like you're resenting how much you're putting in and they're not putting in, like all of those things I think are bad signs. If you have like experienced a lot of growth and they haven't experienced a lot of growth, or another big one for me was like, if you don't even care enough to really bring up the things that are bothering you, or you don't even really want to have the argument because it's like, oh, like I don't even care anymore. You're kind of numb to it.
Yeah, that ambivalence. Mm-hmm. That's the indifference. Yes.
Yeah. It's like, oh, it just is what it is. It's not even worth bringing up anymore. I think that's definitely a bad sign.
It is a bad sign. Yeah, it is for sure. So Carly, what are you working on? Is there anything you want to tell our listeners about where they can find you or what you're working on?
Yes, definitely. Well, first of all, thanks so much for having me. So you can find me on Instagram at Mostly Dating. I also just recently started a new account at Mostly Dating Podcast. That'll be all things podcast related, just to keep that like a little bit separate. And then I also, this week as we're recording, so once this comes out, it'll be out, I am launching a dating course that's a blueprint of everything, all of my content. I have found that I'm always getting questions like, oh, do you have a post on this? Do you have a post on that? And sometimes the thing that I hate about Instagram and podcasts in general is they're really hard to like search and find different things. And so I wanted to put together in one place a step-by-step actionable guide that is going to really help people in those early stages of dating. And it's going to help you self-reflect. It's going to help you figure out what you're looking for. It's going to help you notice, like we've talked about, those patterns, and then include everything I've talked about, like how to like have a better conversation on early dates, how to figure out what they're looking for, and then lead you sort of down to the last video in it is all about defining the relationship. So it's for people who are figuring out what they want and want to get that relationship and call it into their life. So you can find that on my Instagram. And you can listen to my podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Awesome. It was so nice to have you on and chat with you, Carly, on all things sobriety and dating. And thank you all for listening to Sisters in Sobriety. And we will see you next week.
This was Sisters in Sobriety.
Thank you for listening and being with us today.
If you want to learn more about sobriety and meet your community, find us at sistersinsobriety.substack.com.
Are you a sister in sobriety? Then reach out on social media. We'd love to hear from you.
If you're feeling generous, leave us 5 stars and a review and follow us wherever you listen.
You'll never miss an episode. Until next time.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.